The First Church of Cannabis bans pot, at least for now. How the threat by police worked. Why the state will offer tax amnesty again. What a Supreme Court redistricting decision means in Indiana. And Sue Elsperman makes a political move. That plus a potential spoiler in the Indianapolis race for mayor. A southern Indiana mayor turned vigilante and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending July 3, 2015.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.
This week, the state's new religious freedom law, known as RFRA, took effect, and the First Church of Cannabis held its first service. The church service began with a rendition of Amazing Grace played on a harmonica. But the religion based on sacraments that call for smoking marijuana during the service was pot-free. Threats by the prosecutor and the police chief prompted founder Bill Levin to decide that a lawsuit is a better way to test the new law than a criminal defense. Meantime, there was conflict between neighbors and church members.
Marijuana prohibition is unconstitutional.
It's quite silly that we're wasting inappropriate. The cops' time and the taxpayers' money.
More than 80% of Americans support marijuana reform.
Will the celebration of love at the First Church of Cannabis include marijuana someday? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat John Zodi, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwannis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV Statehouse reporter Jim Shella. Mike McDaniel, did the police do the right thing?
Well, the police were there to uphold the laws of the state of Indiana and the city of Indianapolis, and so they had to do what they did by having a presence there. At least that's the answer that they gave. And the prosecutor made it clear that they were going to make sure that nothing illegal happened there. So, you know, they did what they were supposed to do. But, you know, I think this is an interesting case because the gentleman who is the head of this...
The Grand Poobah.
Church, the Grand Poobah, self-proclaimed Grand Poobah.
said that
he decided not to have marijuana use at the service, which I think was smart on his part because if he would have to go to criminal court to try to justify your church versus civil court, he was smart to make that decision. But the problem for them is they're going to have to prove that marijuana is an integral part of their religious service, and the courts usually have a way of winnowing out sincerity on these kinds of things.
Does this eliminate some of the confusion about RFRA?
No, I think it increases the confusion among RFRA. This law is a first-class mess. You have this occurrence happening. At the same time, you've got the prosecutor and the chief of police from opposing political parties saying that this, or at least the prosecutor said, this law is causing us to use resources that we never expected we would have to use.
He's calling for repeal of the law.
Right, which is exactly what should happen. And in addition, we should have those inclusions for LGBT Hoosiers in the statewide civil rights statute. But aside from that, even, you have now the administration stepping all over itself with their trying to climb out of this mess with today. They've canceled their PR contract that we found out this afternoon.
Well, that is an interesting development. Porter Novelli, New York PR firm, was hired for $750,000, and the state this week decided that the recovery from RFRA is sufficient enough that they can cancel the contract.
I think that's an interesting point, and I thought it was interesting also they only spent half of the $750,000
that
they had actually ponied up for in terms of services. So I'm not sure exactly what they got from Porter Novelli because, that's they got a very high hourly rate. But they apparently feel like they got enough, and both sides said all the right things. It makes it look like what everybody thought it was at the time, and that's window dressing. Because, yes, the jobs numbers have been better, and, yes, the economy overall has become a little better in Indiana and across the country. But is it attributable or is it a recovery from these problems? I don't think there's a cause and effect that can be drawn at this point because it's just too soon.
Yeah, the governor was asked about RFRA taking effect this week. First of all, he wrote an op-ed piece where he talked about new laws that took effect on July 1st and managed to conveniently avoid mentioning RFRA.
He only had 500 words.
Yeah, but when asked...
Yeah, we only had 200 laws.
Yeah, when asked about it, he all he talked about was how we've recovered. This isn't over.
Oh, of course it's not over. It's the top item here we're discussing now because of the RFRA debate, I guess, in addition to the RFRA.
He drove all the way here.
I just wanted to say that. Thank you. That has been trademarked, and there are T-shirts available.
Dave's not here.
But the RFRA debate is going to rage for some time, clearly, for a lot of reasons. Now, if you're the governor and your argument has been that, yes, there was an image problem because of a misunderstanding, but we've recovered, what better way to sort of corroborate that recovery than say, we don't even need to spend the rest of this money. Now, whether that's true or not, who's to say? But as John points out, a lot of the job creation, look at the national numbers. I mean, this is not just Indiana specific that you're seeing some kind of job explosion in the state of Indiana. The economy is slowly but surely recovering across the country.
Tell me about the PR of this PR contract, Mike, because on the one hand, it suggests that they're not sure what they're up to, doesn't it?
Well, originally the extra $2 million was put in a budget to help tourism budget.
Okay.
That's what it was designed to do. And the conversation about adding that money was in that process long before we ever got to the end of the session. Then it was suggested at the end of the session that they might use it for this. And then all of a sudden that became the attachment that everybody put to the $2 million. So having money, extra money for tourism is the way this thing started in the first place.
Sure,
I know. I was in every one of those meetings, and I know about that discussion.
That money was put into the budget.
And this recovery is taking place here, as it is across the country. But what the governor is saying is there's no signs that we're taking this major hit right now that everybody threatened to have for the state of Indiana. And sure, you don't know until after a while how long it's going to take to really know what the true facts are. But you got to say that right now it looks like there's not a whole lot of collateral damage as a result of this. And that's a good thing because they've still got to work, and the issue's not going to go away.
All right, but
we've established the issue's not going to go away.
To make the announcement that you're going to drop this contract on the afternoon before a long holiday weekend tells you that they're not real proud of this.
Exactly. I think all I needed to hear was what I heard the governor say a few weeks ago when he was up in South Bend. He said, Indiana had a difficult week. He described the RFRA miss as a week in time where Indiana had a tough week. This governor doesn't get it. The only thing that what's been hurting are his poll numbers. They're going down.
To your original question, too, Jim, I want to bring this point up. Yesterday, on the very first day of the law, there was a lawsuit filed by the ACLU of Indiana in Elkhart County and in Allen County on behalf of people who are sex offenders, have been convicted of sex offenses. And they were, according to the law, were not able to attend church services. And so they've sued under RFRA for the ability to attend church services despite their status as sex offenders. So to your original point about confusion about this law, there's plenty of it.
Well, the legislation was designed to have these cases go to court.
And that's what we're going to see for a while.
And you're going to have that.
It seems like we've invited some unnecessary lawsuits.
You're going to have that.
If you're just looking for pure pop in terms of publicity, the national attention surrounding this week's church service at the First Church of Cannabis, New York Times and others, probably was, if you tried to put a dollar amount or value on it, it was probably worth more than the $1 million that was spent to promote tourism. So I guess maybe that was the plan all along, right?
If you owe back taxes to the state of Indiana, you can pay them off this fall with no consequences. It's called tax amnesty, and it will begin on September 15th and will last for 8 weeks. 10 years ago, Indiana conducted its first tax amnesty and raised $244 million as long lines of taxpayers showed up at the state government center. The goal this time is $90 million. Bob Dittmer of the Department of Revenue.
No penalties, no interest, no collections fees, if there are collections fees on your account, and no follow-up in terms of prosecution, either civil or criminal.
Now we're coming out of one of the worst recessions ever, and I don't think those dollars are going to be there like they were 10 years ago.
And that's Democrat Greg Porter, who criticized the new tax amnesty period because Governor Mitch Daniels said the 2005 amnesty was a one-time only deal. John Zodi, what's wrong with tax amnesty?
Well, I think you have to look at how often we do this. You've got the normal process, the normal cogs of government working. I think Representative Porter makes a good statement and makes a good point that you have to look at how often the state is going to do this and how that disrupts or could potentially interrupt the normal course of collecting taxes. I think what's also interesting is that this is about $90 million is their goal, and the governor's planning to spend this on one of his new initiatives. What he's not spending it on is pre-K, which he could have. He turned away $80 million.
Well, actually, what happened was the money. Yeah, the money went to education. He still wanted his regional cities initiative,
exactly.
And that's kind of where this was born.
Right. But it got fought by Republicans.
The folks in control in the legislature said, "We'll give you your regional cities program if you can raise the money through a tax amnesty."
Should have expanded pre-K.
Yeah.
So this program did start with the legislature in the budget process. It's in the budget bill. Two things to remember here. One, if you participated in the 2005 program, you're not eligible.
Right.
So it protects the idea that you only get one bite at an amnesty apple. Okay. The second thing is owe back taxes from 2012 backwards.
Right.
2013 and 14, you're not eligible because
right.
they don't want people waiting until this program starts to take part. So those protections are in place. You only get one bite at the apple. This was started by the legislature. They're saying they hope to raise $65 million, which that's about management.
That was what they said, what Daniel said
originally.
In 2005. Now they're saying 90.
And they think they're going to raise probably, I would guess, probably 150.
LSA says up to 159.
Well, there's 575 million out there.
Right.
250,000 people eligible. So you got to believe they're going to exceed their $90 million goal, and I will also add that the Regional Cities Program had a lot of bipartisan support in the legislature.
Which is, it's an economic development plan.
Yep.
To do this once every 10 years seems like it makes sense, doesn't it?
When you look at that kind of gap, I suppose, and there are the safeguards that Mike just described where you're not effectively making it standard operating procedure if you're advising your accounting clients, just wait another year or two and you can avoid having to pay a penalty. That's a concern. It's interesting when you look at neighboring states. Just this week, in fact, you had soon-to-be Republican presidential candidate John Kasich, who vetoed vetoed a portion of Ohio's two-year state budget, and part of the thing he vetoed was a tax amnesty plan because he was concerned, in fact, exactly what Greg Porter said, that it would encourage individuals to not take seriously the law.
The response was a little more muted this time. 10 years ago, the Democrats called it the cheater's bill of rights.
Well, it always, like I say, you've got a Republican governor one state away who's making the same argument here that Greg Porter's making. So this is not necessarily a partisan issue in the traditional sense.
I think it's interesting to think and realize that there's $500 million of uncollected taxes out there, and it's a problem that's out there. Compliance is huge, and it's very important. So when you have almost 250,000 taxpayers who are that far behind on their taxes, the safeguards are a great thing. I think that you should do what you can to get this money into the Treasury because it's owed. But I think that you do have to be very aggressive other times of the year. And I didn't really say this now, so don't pay any attention to my returns, because it's in. But, you know, I think you got to realize $500 million is a lot of money, and it's owed to the state. They should go about collecting it as aggressively as they can.
Moving on. The Supreme Court ruled in favor of a nonpartisan redistricting commission in Arizona this week, and it gives hope to people who are pursuing an Indiana commission to combat the fact that none of the 9 congressional seats here are competitive.
Today, the Supreme Court caught up with America. America thinks elections are rigged.
Tom Sugar is an advocate for taking the politics out of redistricting. He has started a nonprofit called Lead or Leave to show how it can be done here in Indiana. The problem he hopes to address is voter apathy. It grows, he believes, from a lack of competitive races.
Do you think that voters ought to choose their representatives, or do you think that politicians should choose their voters?
And so Sugar has drawn his own maps that still give Republicans an advantage, but also create 4 competitive districts.
I think the Supreme Court has done some great things in the last couple of weeks. This might be the most important.
Greg Taylor is a member of a study committee in the General Assembly that will consider redistricting reform and the elimination of safe seats both in Congress and the General Assembly.
My seat is one of those. I represent 76% of Democrats. There's a lot of things that would have to happen before I would not be elected.
John Ketzenberger, will the Republicans who now control the process ever let redistricting be done by independents?
I have a hard time seeing that happen, honestly. But that's not to say it's not a good idea. I think that the leader and I'm spacing on the rest of the name of Tom Sugar's organization. I'm sorry, Tom.
Lead or leave, yes.
Okay, so he's still got a little marketing to do with me, I suppose. But I think that the concept is solid, and I think the idea is solid, especially in the wake of what the Supreme Court held this week. And I do think that the idea of, you know, do legislators choose their voters or do voters choose their legislators is important. Yeah. I think that gerrymandering is a big problem. I think that the maps that Tom showed, according to his analysis, would lead to more competitive seats, and I think that's a good thing for the process.
He's patterned this after what's done in Iowa, and Iowa perennially has the most competitive races of any state in the country. If you're in the legislature, that's not necessarily a favorable argument, right?
You want me to give you the Machiavellian pure politics answer or the good governance answer? I mean, you do have people in the legislature who have argued for a long time, including leadership and on both sides of the aisle, who have said that the old system needs to be revised in some manner to make things more competitive and also to combat voter apathy. So it's not as if you have all incumbents in a uniform fashion against any kind of reform. But you're right. I mean, if you're sitting pretty as an incumbent in a district where that's not competitive, I guess you could make the argument that there's not much incentive for you to do anything other than stick with the status quo.
Well, what this comes down to is that if you go back to the last election, the Democrats got well over 40% of the vote in the race for president, yet only got 29 seats in the legislature. Some people say that's prima facie evidence of gerrymandering.
Well, I didn't hear the same argument when it was the other way. If you look at the maps that Ed Mahern drew when the Democrats drew these the last time, they look like snakes all over the state just to try to make them get them as many districts as they could. The maps that were drawn by the Republicans this time were boxes, went along township lines, went along city boundaries, and so forth and so on.
But they did
and
use...
the Democrats didn't challenge them because they were drawn in the way that they're supposed to by law.
But they did use political considerations. They looked at the makeup of the voters.
You have to do that because the law stipulates that. But my point is, I'm not sure how you pick a nonpartisan commission. I will go on record right now as saying that I volunteer to be on that commission. I'm sure John would volunteer to be on that commission.
Yeah.
We'll be glad to help out you can't get there.
Tom Sugar's a Democrat.
But that's
it's hard to find people.
But Sugar's plan was to have LSA draw the maps.
This was about the Supreme Court decision in Arizona.
Well, we're talking about the leader-leader process.
Even in Iowa, he's following the Iowa example, and the legislature would have to approve it, but it's take it or leave it. based on maps that were drawn without taking into account political factors.
That's right. So if we take a step back, what Tom is trying to do, and I've, you know, talked to Tom several times about his idea, it's gotten some good response, and so we'll see where the Legislative Study Committee goes, but we have to look. We are 15 years down the road from the last time my party drew the maps. It's my job as a party chair and that of a bunch of others to get people to vote. There has got to be something institutionally that is going to have to change with to increase voter turnout. Indiana blazed the modern trail of voter suppression back in 2005 when we started with a voter ID law. And since that time, Republicans in the General Assembly have pushed voter suppression laws. So there has to be something institutional to turn turnout around. We had the worst in the country last year. Tom is trying to come up with a system that both parties can support.
Quickly.
There are algorithms, I imagine. Computers can do everything else. You could start with a benchmark that it's done truly with some wonkish solution. And I'm not advocating necessarily technology. It would still have to be approved, obviously, by humans, including the legislature at some point. But that's a starting, perhaps an argument for a starting point.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, should Indiana have nonpartisan redistricting? Your choices are A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question, how many mayoral debates should take place? 42% said one is enough, 3% said nine, 52% said somewhere between 1 and 9, and 3% said none. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. A professional canvassing organization was working the streets down in Indianapolis this week, gathering signatures to add the name of Reverend Charles Harrison to the ballot in the race for mayor. Harrison says he doesn't know who is behind the canvassing and says he will give considerable thought to a run for mayor. The deadline to file the necessary petition signatures passed this week. 3,175 are required. If enough signatures are validated, Harrison would be listed as an independent candidate. We find out by July 15th. John Zodi, could he be a spoiler?
Well, I don't think so. I think Joe Hogsett's going to be elected the next mayor of Indianapolis. It takes a lot to run a campaign for mayor. We need to find out what the story is behind these petitions. And then Reverend Harrison apparently needs to make a decision on whether he'll run. But Joe Hogsett has run a strong campaign. He just released, I think, his third ad today. He's got a lot of money and a lot of resources and a lot of people supporting him. He'll be elected mayor.
Would Harrison be more likely to take votes away from Republican Chuck Brewer or Democrat Joe Hogsett?
I can't answer that one. But I will remind my friend John here that Goliath was a 40-point favorite, and Chuck Brewer is a terrific candidate, in fact a very articulate guy, and when he has this campaign on the air, he's going to really cut into this, and I think this is going to end up being a very competitive race.
Okay, that's right. According to our poll was based on the fact that Brewer asked for 9 debates. Today, Hogsett said that he will agree to debate and he'll agree to multiple debates, but wouldn't say how many. Is that significant?
The debate over debates. I'd be surprised if we didn't have that kind of jockeying. If you have a distinct advantage, which even Goliath at some point really did have a distinct advantage, Mike probably would agree. Your strategy would be, conventional wisdom would suggest, not to debate, not to give your opponent a platform. So the fact that there is agreement that there will be multiple debates, I guess, is all we really need to know now. But that's par for the course.
But Brewer really needs an opportunity to make some waves.
Yeah, he does, and I think he understands that. And I think also, to Mike's point, I think the Hogsett campaign has gone to school on previous campaigns, and we saw where Mayor Ballard beat then-sitting Mayor Peterson in an unexpected race. I think that Hogsett's determined not to let that happen. Still could, but I think he's very cognizant of that.
Finally, a southern Indiana mayor is making headlines for stopping some would-be thieves from breaking into his home. Jeffersonville Mayor Mike Moore says he caught a group of 5 boys trying to break into his garage Monday night. Moore said he stopped doing the dinner dishes and ran outside.
You know, I walk on over here to the sidewalk, and that's where the one kid, pretty dumb move on his part, but he's riding his bicycle real fast down through here by me. He had long dreadlocks. I grabbed the dreadlocks as he went by, pulled him off the bike. His bike goes crashing into the tree over there. He's flipping around and trying to get away.
Moore said he traded punches with another potential thief, says he won't press charges if they're caught. He'd like to talk to them about making good choices. Mike McDaniel, does that qualify as tough on crime?
I tell you what, I wouldn't mess with Mayor Moore if I was doing something wrong down there. I can tell you that. He was protecting his property, and more power to him.
You know, we're hoping he needs a new job after November, because we hope to beat him in the November election. So maybe get a job as a security officer.
Well, that's going to help him in the campaign, isn't it?
Oh, it's going to help him big time.
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat John Zoda. You don't think that was a publicity stunt, do you? Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.